We now go back to government politics. School surcharge veto stands. Lawmakers pave way for Petersburg casino vote. Written by Charlotte Renee Woods of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. After years of trying on both sides of the aisle, lawmakers will have to try again to give localities the option to levy taxes on to fund school construction. An effort to overturn Governor Glenn Youngkin's veto of the proposal failed during the reconvened session on Wednesday, but lawmakers backed a Youngkin amendment that will enable Petersburg residents to vote this year on whether to build a casino resort. During Wednesday's reconvened session, lawmakers reviewed the governor's amendments to 116 bills and his 153 vetoes. With the legislature closely divided, lawmakers did not muster the two-thirds vote to override any of Youngkin's vetoes. Senate Bill 14, sponsored by Senator Jeremy McPike, Democrat from Prince William, and House Bill 805, sponsored by Delegate Sam Russell, Democrat Roanoke, would let any locality levy a 1% surcharge on sales taxes to fund school construction if voters approved it in a local referendum. Youngkin had said this in his veto message. This proposal could result in a nearly $1.5 billion a year tax increase on Virginians. Some localities would have a combined sales tax rate of 8% with no additional offsets, such as reduced income tax or property tax. Senator Bill Stanley, Republican from Franklin, who supported the bill and the override attempt, said Wednesday, "On this side, I know that we are not for increasing taxes." He added, "Why this bill is actually okay is because of the way it is fashioned. The people decide whether they want to be taxed." In recent years, the General Assembly has approved some localities to do what McPike and Rasool's bill would allow all localities the option to do. Both Republicans and Democrats have carried the bill in recent years, arguing that the option should be available statewide. "This is something we should let localities decide for themselves," McPike said when he initiated the veto override attempt. Supporters of the bill say it's needed to help modernize schools with outdated infrastructure and less resources. A state study found that over 1,000 of Virginian schools are more than 50 years old. Stanley described schools with leaking roofs or insufficient electrical outlets. He said the disparate wealth in Virginia's localities leaves some students in lesser learning environments than some of their peers in parts of the state where schools are modernized. They receive what is supposed to be an identical diploma, but the education is not the same. Ultimately, the Senate voted 25 to 15, which is shy of the two-thirds vote needed to override the veto. The House also sustained the veto on Rasool's version of the bill. Lawmakers will return May 13th to rework the state budget. McPike said there may be a path forward in those negotiations to explore tools to help localities fund school projects. Lawmakers backed Youngkin's amendment to remove a reenactment clause from the casino legislation sponsored by Senator LaCriche Aird, a Democrat from Petersburg. Lawmakers removed a clause that would have required legislators to pass Aird's bill again in 2025 before Petersburg residents could vote on a casino. Petersburg officials hailed the legislature's vote, which means the city can hold a casino referendum this fall. Governor Glenn Youngkin previously signed legislation that bars Richmond from holding another casino vote. Richmond residents have twice rejected a casino resort. Five companies are vying for the right to develop a Petersburg casino: Bally's, Penn Entertainment, the Warrington Group, Rush Street Gaming, and the Cordish Companies, which has partnered with former NFL and Virginia Tech Football Hall of Famer Bruce Smith. Petersburg Mayor Sam Parham said in a statement Wednesday, "On behalf of the City Council and the City Administration, I deeply thank Senator Aird for her unwavering commitment, hard work, and dedication to Petersburg and their residents. This opportunity has the potential to be a game changer for our city. Senator Aird has fulfilled her promise to equip Petersburg with the needed tools to drive positive change and foster growth for future generations. The city also wants to thank Governor Youngkin for removing the reenactment clause and the General Assembly for final approval." The city statement said City Manager March Altman will form a committee of city team members and community representatives to plan this fall's casino referendum. Much of Wednesday's reconvened session focused on Youngkin's proposed amendments to 116 bills that the legislature had already approved. In cases in which lawmakers rejected or did not act on Youngkin's amendments, he can now sign or veto the bills within the next 30 days. Legislators passed by for the day Youngkin's substitute version of Senate Bill 237 by Senator Ghazala Hashmi, Democrat from Chesterfield, and House Bill 609 by Delegate Sia Price, Democrat from Newport News. The lawmakers' bills, as they passed the legislature, said that health care providers have a right to prescribe contraceptives and that people have a right to obtain them. The bill also offered definitions of forms of contraception and outlined legal actions people can take if their rights are infringed. Youngkin's substitute simply would have aligned Virginia with U.S. Supreme Court rulings that federally protect the right to contraception. Hashmi and Price say their proposal should be useful should the U.S. Supreme Court reverse its previous rulings, as it has with Roe v. Wade. Legal experts say that Youngkin's substitute is not as strong of a legal protection as Hashmi and Price bills. In a related matter Wednesday, the House and Senate rejected Youngkin's changes to bills that would require health insurers to cover contraceptives. His recommendation for Bill 238 by Hashmi and House Bill 819 by Delegate Candy Munden King, a Democrat from Prince William, added a line for exemptions. "The provisions of this section shall not be interpreted or construed to apply to any non-governmental plan sponsor that is exempt under federal or state law based on sincerely held religious or ethical beliefs," which is what Youngkin's recommendation stated. Hashmi said Wednesday, "We do not have a definition of quote-unquote sincerely held ethical beliefs in state code." This article on page 4, "School Surcharge Veto Stands, Lawmakers Pave the Way for Petersburg Casino Vote," written by Charlotte Renee Woods of the Richmond Times-Dispatch.
And turning to page 5, "Fluvanna Nurse Accused of Stealing Painkillers." This article is written by Luca Powell of the Richmond Times-Dispatch. A nurse at a hyper-monitored state women's prison was arrested for allegedly stealing oxycodone and forging records, court records show. Michelle Collier, a nurse at Fluvanna Correctional Center for Women, stands charged with possessing oxycodone, a Schedule II drug, and committing forgery on a count sheet used by the prison to track the distribution of the pills. Collier was a nurse responsible for pill administration. She was indicted by a Fluvanna County jury in December 2023. Oxycodone is a highly addictive drug used for pain management. Its sale, misuse, and improper marketing by pharmaceutical companies in the early 2000s is widely attributed to sparking America's opioid epidemic. The missing medications were flagged on the evening of March 3rd, according to internal emails shared by the prison's former nursing director, Benitez Towler Moore. Another prison nurse found that an inmate didn't have enough pain pills to last him through the weekend. Moore was later demoted and transferred by administrators with the Department of Corrections. She has filed a complaint stating that one of the reasons she believes she was punished was because she reported pill theft twice since being hired 3 months earlier. Court records show that Collier plans to make a guilty plea on May 9th rather than take the matter to a jury trial. A nurse under the same license number but a slightly different name, Michelle Morris Collier, was reprimanded for withdrawing and failing to document administering hydrocodone in 2017. That incident occurred at a nursing home before Collier took a job with the state prison system. Collier was made to take a class on how to properly document drugs, but her license was otherwise unaffected. The Virginia Department of Health Professions did not return questions seeking comment on whether Collier had changed her middle name. A spokesperson for the Virginia Department of Corrections did not return a request for comment on Wednesday. Fluvanna Correctional Center for Women was ordered to improve its healthcare delivery for prisoners there in 2016. That order came from the federal judge Norman K. Moon in the wake of a civil suit brought by prisoners in 2012. The suit alleged that the prison had a systemic problem of failing to meet medical standards required under the U.S. Constitution. It was initiated when medical staffing at Fluvanna was run by a for-profit company called Armour Correctional Health Services. The state has since ceased to use them for prison health care. Since 2020, a prison health care professional named Homer Venters has made annual visits to Fluvanna to inspect how it cares for more than 900 women housed there. Venters has remained in that role for years as the Virginia Department of Corrections has tried to bring the prison in compliance with standards agreed upon under the agreement. His most recent report found that the prison had made progress but was still lacking in several key departments, including electronic record keeping. On Wednesday, the Times-Dispatch asked Venters whether he was notified about any issues with drug diversion. Venters did not reply to calls or an email seeking comment. The Times-Dispatch has previously reported on medical malpractice histories associated with employees of Virginia's prison system, including three doctors who had their licenses revoked or suspended before being hired to care for the incarcerated. In response to that reporting, Kyle Gibson, a Department of Corrections spokesperson, said, "It is challenging to find providers with correctional experience or who are committed to providing care to this vulnerable population. Many of Virginia Department of Corrections doctors choose to work for the department due to a genuine interest in practicing medicine in a correctional setting," Gibson said. "This setting provides a unique challenge and opportunity for public service." This page 5 article, titled "Fluvanna Nurse Accused of Stealing Painkillers," was written by Luca Powell of the Richmond Times-Dispatch.
On page 11, we have an Associated Press piece, "Hugh Grant and Tabloid to Settle Lawsuit." Hugh Grant accepted an enormous sum of money to settle a lawsuit accusing the Sun Tabloid of unlawfully tapping his phone, bugging his car, and breaking into his home to snoop on him, the actor said Wednesday, after the agreement was announced in court. Grant said he reluctantly settled because of a court policy that could have stuck him with a huge legal bill, even if he prevailed at trial, a reality that could also force fellow claimant Prince Harry to settle, their lawyer said. A civil court rule intended to avoid jamming up the courts would have required Grant to pay legal fees to both sides if he won at trial, but was awarded anything lower than the settlement offer. As is common with entirely innocent people, they are offering me an enormous sum of money to keep this matter out of court, Grant said on the social media platform X. Even if every allegation is proven in court, I would still be liable for something approaching £10 million, which is around $12.4 million in costs. I am afraid I am shying at that fence. The amount of the settlement was not disclosed. NGN said it admitted no liability, and the settlement was in the financial interest of both parties to avoid a costly trial. Grant and other claimants have alleged that NGN, a subsidiary of the media empire built by Robert Murdoch, violated their privacy through widespread unlawful activity that included hiring private investigators to intercept voicemails, tap phones, bug cars, and use deception to access confidential information between 1994 and 2016. Grant is among several celebrities, including actress Sienna Miller, soccer star Paul Gassion, and Spice Girl Melanie Chisholm, who settled claims against the publisher. Attorney Gijin Binayam, who was not involved in the case, said that the publisher probably used the incredibly powerful rules of the court by making an offer Grant was unlikely to surpass at trial. Therefore, even though he may have preferred to have fought the case, the financial risks were simply too great, and he had, in effect, no choice but to settle. The settlement leaves the Duke of Sussex and 41 others scheduled to go to trial in the High Court in January, though their lawyer said settlements were being forced upon them. The Duke of Sussex is subject to the same issues that Sienna Miller and Hugh Grant have been subject to, which is that the offers are made that make it impossible for them to go ahead, David Sherborne told a judge Wednesday at a hearing in the case. The settlement came less than a year after Justice Timothy Fancourt rejected NGN's attempt to throw out Grant's lawsuit alleging unlawful information gathering. If true, these allegations would establish very serious deliberate wrongdoing at NGN, conducted on an institutional basis on a huge scale. Fancourt wrote this in May. They would also establish a concerted effort to conceal the wrongdoing by hiding and destroying relevant documentary evidence, repeated public denials, lies to regulators and authorities, and unwarranted threats to those who dare to make the allegations or notify intended claims against The Sun. Grant said in a witness statement that he could never figure out who broke into his fourth floor apartment in 2011. The door was pried off its hinges, and the interior looked like there had been a fight, but nothing was missing. 2 days later, The Sun had a story detailing the interior and signs of a domestic row. Hugh Grant, tabloid to settle lawsuit, was written by the Associated Press.
And on page six, teenager shot to death in Chesterfield identified. Chesterfield County Police on Wednesday identified the juvenile killed in a Thursday evening shooting as 16-year-old Christopher Gates III of the 15,200 block of Timsbury Terrace. Officers initially responded to the 15,100 block of Broadwater Way at around 5:37 p.m. Thursday for reports of a shooting, police said. At the scene, officers found Gates with an apparent gunshot wound. Officers rendered aid to Gates before he was transported to a hospital where he died of his injuries, police said. The incident remains under investigation. Anyone with information is asked to contact the Chesterfield Police Department at 804-748-1251 or Crime Solvers at 804-748-0660 or through the P3 Tips app. And one more tiny piece. Richmond police are investigating a fatal shooting that happened around midday Wednesday in the East End. It's the city's ninth homicide since Easter. Police responded to a report of a shooting at 11:31 a.m. in the 1300 block of Coulter Street. Officers found a man on the ground with apparent gunshot wounds. Police said he was taken to a local hospital where he died from his injuries. And again, police ask anyone with information about this homicide to contact Detective M. Gouldman at 804-646-3195.
That's all we have for reading today's April 18th Richmond Times Dispatch. I'm Steve Hojacki, along with Sandy Mayer for the Virginia Voice. This program is brought to you through the generous support of the Richmond Times Dispatch.